Thanks for sticking with us on The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we're continuing our conversation about Olympic gymnastics. And just a note to listeners, we're going to discuss sexual assault in this conversation. At the press conference following the USA women's gymnastics team's silver medal win, Simone Biles indicated there were many variables making this year's Olympic Games stressful. One of those factors is likely the reality that this is the first Summer Olympics since Larry Nassar was convicted in 2018 following decades of abusing the girls and young women entrusted to his care as a team doctor for America's Olympic gymnasts. Just how has the International Olympic Committee, or IOC, changed its policies and protocols to prevent harm and abuse within the games? And is it enough? Here to help us answer these questions is Jennifer Gerson, a reporter at the 19th. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Hey, thank you so much, Melissa.
So let's just start with, what are the current sexual assault protocols in the Olympic Village?
That is a great question. The direct answer is that there is a safeguarding officer present in the villages, and there's some centers within the villages for reporting if there's an incident of sexual violence of any kind. The longer answer is, it's hard to really parse what that means in practicality for athletes. The existing protocols for sexual assault reporting as they stand today have been in place at least since 2016 through the IOC. In 2018 is when they set up these centers within the villages to make reporting seemingly easier. But if you talk to athletes and people who work with athletes, there's still question marks in terms of what this actually means and how not just easy, but kind of tenable it is to make a report and know that something's going to happen when that happens.
I'm kind of puzzling at this moment. We actually know an awful lot about sexual assault reporting and about not only the challenges and difficulties of reporting, but also that, you know, the presence of law enforcement not only doesn't always make that easier, but can sometimes actually be the source of these assaults. I'm wondering if there is, discussion with the athletes, if there's, you know, any kind of set of rules around this, like, really, law enforcement is the answer?
Well, so how the current safeguarding officer's office works within the IOC is that once a report is made by an athlete to anyone, and in theory, anyone who works with athletes, coaches, trainers, anyone who's part of the Olympic entourage in any capacity is subject to a mandatory reporting requirement. Now, whether people actually know this is another question. That's something that came up in my own reporting, that there's a lot of, maybe not lack of clarity, but a lot of people, I think, who just have not been even informed of that policy. And that's a real concern amongst athletes and people who work with athletes, that people may not know about the mandatory reporting requirements. But even after an athlete does disclose to someone, that person is then supposed to go on and make a report through the safeguarding officer in the villages. And then from that point, the safeguarding officer makes the call. Are they getting local law enforcement involved? Are they pursuing some other means of investigation? So it's even kind of tricky at that point to even parse what's even happening. I mean, for some people, I think law enforcement involvement would almost be a best case scenario to know that some action has been taken. So that's part of what's really tricky about this too. And the language around how this is structured is pretty loose. So I think there's just a real general lack of clarity for athletes and their entourages on what actually does happen when a report is filed. And I think it's a real concern for a lot of people right now.
So Jennifer, as you were sort of walking us through that, you know, I've been a college professor 20 some odd years, and it sounds an awful lot like some of the challenges that occur on college campuses with someone to whom you report, a lot of young people living together. And we know that sexual assault is a reality and a far too common one on college campuses. What do we know about the prevalence of assault in Olympic villages?
That's a great question and a great analogy, because that's something that came up in my reporting again, where that comparison to what's happening on college campuses was frequently made and is a really good point of reference and something that fortunately most people are familiar with, because it is so prevalent on college campuses. And it's not that different at the Olympics. And depending on how different studies were modeled and the parameters of how, you know, those studies were set forth, you know, somewhere between 2% and 50% of athletes across the board have reported in their lifetimes experiencing some form of sexual violence, and up to 90% have reported experiencing some form of sexual harassment. So we know that sexual violence of all kinds is a real problem in athletics. And some of the risk factors for these things to occur are elite athletics, which the Olympics is certainly as elite as it gets, and traveling and being away from your kind of home base, home community, and anytime when you're participating in your sport on the road, which again is happening at the Olympics. And this year, even more significantly so with what's going on with COVID and the current protocols for that, people's families aren't with them. They're really on their own at these games. So basically every major risk factor that could possibly be in place is definitely in place for the Olympics, making this a real challenge for athletes. And we know this is an issue. And now every red flag is up in terms of what could make this even more likely to happen.
Speaking of red flags, a U.S. fencer was allowed to compete in the Olympics this year, even after teammates reported accusations of sexual assault. What does that tell us?
Well, it tells us a lot about, I think, the reality that exists for a lot of athletes and folks who work with athletes and are concerned about these issues. The situation with the fencer who had been part of the Columbia University fencing team at the start of his career, and that's where the allegations against him stem from, was from his time at Columbia. Again, tell us a lot about the realities of these reporting systems. You know, complaints were made within Columbia's Title IX system. Complaints have been made within the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, which is the independent organization that ever since the Nassar case has been kind of the clearinghouse for investigation of sexual assault allegations. You know, claims keep being made. People are making reports. Reporting isn't the issue, which I think, again, is the concern. The seemingly mechanisms are set up for reporting. Doesn't mean that much is actually happening from that point. And that's what's happened with this fencer. There's been three allegations of sexual violence against him. He's still in the Olympics. And the kind of solution that seemingly has been come up with was, well, he just won't stay at the Villages, which in the times we live in, and when we know that so much of sexual violence, especially amongst athletes, from people I spoke with in my reporting over and over again, what came up was just the presence of the role that technology, phones, social media play in sometimes facilitating the situations in which sexual violence takes place. People are still on their phones, even if they aren't in the Olympic Village together, and things could be happening to help contribute to a situation that could be dangerous for some people.
Jennifer Gerson is a reporter at the 19th. Thank you for joining us and helping us remember, even as we're enjoying the games, we got to protect the athletes.
Well, thank you so much, Melissa. It's been so great speaking with you today. I really appreciate your time.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.